within the structures of the union, we recognise that lesbians and gay men exist out there in the workplace and within the union, and that we want them as part of that body of the union.
I can't tell you how many times over the last 6 months we thought we would never make it to today. Then I look at all of you and I just want to cry.
Get out there, buy tickets, go to shop yourself stupid, throw together a frock, make up a float, have fun. Long live Mardi Gras!
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The gender issue deposes an Indian Hijra mayor, British workers speak in unison for queer rights, and a born-again Mardi Gras launches in Sydney. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 8, 2003. India's first transgender Hijra to win elected office was deposed by a state appellate court this week on gender grounds. Kamla Jan's election in 2000 as mayor of Katni came by a large margin, and many other Hijra have followed her into politics with some success. Most of Jean's Katni constituents have been happy with her job performance. But the office is specifically reserved for a female, and some who opposed her election won a trial court ruling last year that Jean is a male and therefore disqualified. That ruling was suspended pending Jean's appeal to the Madhya Pradesh High Court. That appeals court this week upheld the trial court's ruling and ordered Jean to resign, declaring the office officially vacant. Jean argued that she is a woman and cited a 1994 national government statement endorsed by the Election Commission, which declares that Hijra can run for any post, regardless of whether it has been reserved for a male or a female. The appellate decision threatens the status of several other Hijra who've won offices reserved for women. Jean is expected to appeal to the Indian Supreme Court.
But elsewhere, gay and lesbian politicians continue to advance. In the Netherlands, the small left-wing D66 party elected openly gay member of parliament Boris Diederik, its leader, late last month. It's the second time there's been a gay party leader in the Netherlands parliament. The Greens were led by Peter Lankhorst in the 1980s. Of course, last year, the late Pim Fortuyn headed the party that bore his own name. But he was assassinated before the elections that would have put him in the parliament.
And openly gay MP from Nova Scotia, Scott Bryson, last week officially declared his candidacy for leadership of Canada's Progressive Conservative Party. After his rousing speech to a cheering crowd, he told the CBC,
"I'm not a gay politician. I'm a politician who happens to be gay."
Bryson currently serves as the Tories' spokesperson on finance. Four others have already declared their candidacy, and there may be more before the party's leadership convention in June. Although Canada's Tories have long been divided on gay and lesbian issues, outgoing longtime Tory leader Joe Clark welcomed Bryson's announcement and told reporters he believes the party membership are prepared to judge candidates on their merits and that sexual orientation will not be a determining factor one way or the other.
Other Canadian gays and lesbians are also getting a chance to stand up and be counted in a national survey by the federal government. Although Statistics Canada first asked about same-gender couples in the 2001 census, after some preliminary testing, it began last month to inquire about individual sexual orientation in its biennial Canadian Community Health Study. That national year-long telephone poll of 130,000 people includes the question, do you consider yourself to be heterosexual, homosexual, that is, lesbian or gay, or bisexual? The move was sparked by civil rights laws, since government lacks the kind of statistical data on sexual orientation that it has for other protected categories such as gender, race, and religion. John Fisher, head of Canada's national gay and lesbian group EGAL, believes the poll will undercount lesbi gays, as many will be unwilling to out themselves to the government.
In the U.S., a New York State jury this week ordered the nation's highest ever damages award for an individual in an anti-gay discrimination lawsuit, more than $11 million against multi-billionaire Leona Helmsley for firing the manager of her Park Lane hotel, Charles Bell, after learning that he's gay. Bell had sought $40 million but was pleased with the victory and said he'd use the funds to help the gay community. Helmsley's attorneys moved quickly, seeking to have the judgment set aside, and it's expected that they'll either appeal or settle with Bell for a lesser amount. Helmsley had already settled another anti-gay discrimination claim with a former employee, and two others are pending against her.
A major oil business merger last year eliminated a policy against sexual orientation discrimination. The U.S. National Gay and Lesbian Advocacy Group Human Rights Campaign announced this week. Conoco had the policy until its August merger with Phillips Petroleum. But the merged entity, ConocoPhillips, has no such formal written policy. A spokesperson told HRC the company has no plans to change its policy until such time as U.S. federal law is changed to prohibit anti-gay discrimination. HRC condemned the ConocoPhillips move as short-sighted and a slap in the face to its lesbian and gay workers. More than 60% of Fortune 500 corporations, including many oil industry leaders, have such policies. But a similar loss occurred in 1999, when Exxon merged with Mobil to create ExxonMobil, which dropped Mobil's non-discrimination policy and domestic partner benefits. HRC is a co-filer of a fifth attempt this year at a shareholder resolution for ExxonMobil to add sexual orientation to its non-discrimination policy.
But the world's oldest gay and lesbian bookstore has been saved at the last gasp. New York City's Oscar Wilde Bookshop, founded in 1967 by the late Craig Rodwell, was set to close last month after years of serious financial losses. But it was announced this week that Deacon McCubbin of Washington, D.C.'s Lambda Rising Bookstores has stepped in to buy the Wilde store and keep it open. He told the New York Times that, "We think this store is way too important to let it close. It's more than a store. It's a part of our history."
It was a rocky week for gay and lesbian civil rights in U.S. legislatures. A New Mexico State Senate committee voted to give the full Senate due pass recommendations on both a bill to prohibit job discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identification, and a hate crimes bill, including anti-gay attacks.
But in the Minnesota House, a bill was introduced to repeal the protections from discrimination that gays and lesbians have enjoyed there since 1993.
In Colorado, a House committee killed a domestic partners bill that would have extended rights in the areas of parenting, insurance, inheritance, and finances.
In Wyoming, the state where gay Matthew Shepard was notoriously bashed to death in 1998, a state House committee killed the latest attempt to increase penalties for hate-motivated crimes there.
At the municipal level, sponsors withdrew two bills to prohibit sexual orientation discrimination in Nashville, Tennessee. Although the measures had been strongly protested by the Southern Baptist Convention, city council members Chris Farrell and Eileen Behan said they would work together to rewrite their measures into a single bill less vulnerable to legal challenge, which they'll submit next month.
And in Cincinnati, Ohio, the only city in the U.S. with a charter amendment prohibiting laws making sexual orientation a protected class, the city council voted 7-2 to add sexual orientation as a category protected by the city's hate crimes ordinance. The vote came 5 weeks after the widely reported shooting death in the area of gay Gregory Beauchamp, believed to be a homophobic hate crime. There has yet to be a conviction under Cincinnati's so-called ethnic intimidation ordinance since its 1995 enactment. Cincinnati voters passed the anti-gay amendment in 1993, and although it went to the U.S. Supreme Court along with the successful challenge to Colorado's 1992 statewide amendment 2, the High Court sent it back down to a federal appeals court, which repeated its own previous affirmation of the city measure almost verbatim.
In Finland, a parliamentary committee has approved a bill to criminalize provision of fertility treatment to women not married to or living with a man. Finland's government opposes the committee's amendments to its own bill on the subject, which would have allowed the treatments for single women and lesbian couples. Some MPs don't want to prohibit the treatments to single women and lesbians, but don't want the public health system to fund them. Finland's Women's Affairs Union denounced the committee's version of the bill as a violation of constitutional guarantees of equality.
And finally, apparently there are non-gays who find it profitable to pretend they are. The Russian singing duo Tattoo, an abbreviation for the Russian phrase "This Girl Loves That Girl," hit number one on British pop charts this week with their debut single, All the Things She Said. All the things she said, all the things she said. In their video version, the teenage singers Julia Folkova and Lena Katina wear school uniforms and cuddle and kiss each other. That's been controversial in the UK, where the BBC and ITV networks won't play it, and a pair of popular TV hosts and a child welfare group denounced it as pornography for pedophiles and a portrayal of underage sex. Tattoo's producer believes that criticism increased sales severalfold. But while Tattoo have played with the image of a lesbian couple, the Moscow Times said that few doubt that their sexual ambiguity is a ploy to boost album sales. Tattoo admitted to World Entertainment News Network that the males they'd been seen with at a Moscow club are their boyfriends, and Volkova said of her relationship with Katina, "There has been something between us, but it's just an emotion. Everyone's so sure we're lesbianki, but maybe we're bisexualki. Why not?" And when reporters asked the singers this week if they're lovers, Volkova said, "Maybe and maybe not. You know we're not going to give a straight answer."
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 8th, 2003, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
It could have met an inglorious end, but you'll hear the world's most celebrated queer celebration launch a re-energized new beginning later in the program. The UK's foremost public service union, Unison, is a leader among British trade unions in formulating and pursuing pro-gay and lesbian policies. During the October 2002 Workers' Out Conference in Sydney, Australia, This Way Out correspondent Michael Schembri had a chat with Unison's Lucille Thurlby.
Our union story is there to be seen. We've won many victories and we've suffered defeats. As I turn through the pages and look back through time, there's one single question stands out in my mind. Today we may prosper, today we live free, but if it weren't for the union, where would we be? It's our union that defends our rights, but our union's as strong as our will is to fight. For the union is you, and the union is me, so stand up and stand by our union.
Unison was formed in 1993, which is a merger of three public service unions. One was called NALGO, one was called NUPI, and one was called COSY. And between them they covered all of the public service industries, for example, health, local government, administrative people in higher education, further education, but also the energy sectors, water and transport. And they were merged in 1993 to form Unison, which is now the biggest union in the UK.
So what kind of membership are we looking at? How many?
Throughout local government, so we recruit from the chief executive down to the cleaners, and within the health service we recruit from nurses through to the ancillary staff, mainly administration within the energy sectors and transport sectors. And in higher education we wouldn't recruit teachers, but we would recruit the administrative support staff.
I believe that Unison has a very good policy on gay and lesbian issues. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, Unison in its creation has a rule book commitment to the self-organisation for lesbians and gay men, along with the other four self-organised groups of women, black members and disabled members. And that commitment means that every branch, every member has to agree with that commitment to recognising the rights of lesbians and gay men, but also that within the structures of the union that we recognise that lesbians and gay men exist out there in the workplace and within the union, and that we want them as part of that body of the union, and we have national and regional structures to support that.
How did this all happen?
It originally started in one of the previous partner unions, and then was developed through the merger process, and a lot of the key activists at the time fought hard to maintain that recognition of self-organisation within Unison, and that has then led to Unison having a rulebook commitment to self-organisation and lesbians and gay men.
When you say previous activists, were they solely trade union activists, or were they also coming from community background?
No, it's mainly trade union activists, although all lesbians and gay workers tend to be community activists as well, and I think that background has fed into that organisation and looking at how we organise within the workplace and within the union itself.
What relationship is there between Unison and the Trade Union Congress, the peak organisation in the UK?
Unison has a good working relationship with the Trade Union Congress, but also there is a specific lesbian and gay, bisexual, transgender group within the TUC, and Unison has delegates to their conferences, which happen on a yearly basis, and has been influential in getting those conferences up and running.
So does the TUC also have policies similar to Unison's, or are you working towards that?
I think that's something that we're working towards at this moment in time.
You said that by 2004 the UK has to comply with European Union rules about discrimination and other issues at work. Can you talk more about that?
Yes. I mean, there is a directive from the EU which will, for the first time in the UK, mean that lesbian and gay workers do have rights to not be discriminated against on the grounds of their sexuality, and this has been something that has been a long time coming within the UK, but it is very much on the back of the directive that the government has had to implement this. So we're very much working towards all of our policies, and when we're talking to employers, we're encouraging them to take on those obligations already, so that people are getting that protection into their terms and conditions initially, without waiting for that legislation to come to force them to do that.
But once it does, does that mean that the legislation supplants the role of trade union work, or will trade unions still be there effectively policing those rules?
I think yes. I mean, it's with any legislation, we see that as a minimum rather than a maximum process, and so therefore we use that as a lever to start that discussion with employers to make sure that we get the right benefits and rights for our members within the workplace, and therefore using that as a backdrop rather than the sole aim for our union.
That was Lucille Thurlby of the British trade union Unison in conversation with This Way Out correspondent Michael Schembri.
It's our union that defends our rights, but our union's as strong as our will is to fight. For the union is you, and the union is me. So stand up and stand by our union. It's our union that defends our rights, but our union's as strong as our will. The fight for the union is you, and the union is me. So stand up and stand by our union.
Hi, I am Ken Moala, all the way from Apia, Samoa in the South Pacific. I have just won a silver medal in netball, and you are listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. So
it's make it or break it time for the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras after its financial collapse last year. This year's February 7th launch was awaited with some trepidation as the first Mardi Gras under the new Mardi Gras board. The venue was not the usual and glamorous opera house, but a central city park, and the stage was only a quarter the size of the previous years. But the turnout was magnificent and gave new hope for the survival of one of the world's largest gay and lesbian celebrations. The speakers included co-chairs Stevie Clayton and Michael Woodhouse, 30-year-old West Australian lesbian Labour Member of Parliament Louise Pratt, and veteran gay activist and barrister David Buchanan. The crowd was entertained by Robin, Shauna, and Michael, Trevor Ashley, Pop Princess, and up-and-coming pop star Hayley Aiken.
Well, Sydney, happy new Mardi Gras.
I can't believe this is really happening. I can't tell you how many times over the last 6 months we thought we would never make it to today. Then I look at all of you and I just want to cry. I know that I speak on behalf of Michael and the rest of the board and all of our amazing volunteers when I say we've worked our butts off for the last 5 months to create a new organisation and to recreate this most amazing of seasons. And we've done that believing that it's what you wanted us to do, but never quite sure how many of us were behind, how many of you were behind us. Tonight was the first test, and you didn't let us down. So thank you for joining us at the launch of the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras 2003 season. Tonight we celebrate 25 years of gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual and queer culture. Take the opportunity over the next 3 weeks to enjoy the festival, to laugh and to play and to party hard. But also take every opportunity to demand equality, and at every opportunity say loudly and repeatedly until John Howard can hear it, not now, not ever, and not in my name, do not take Australia to war.
Yes, folks, we have survived. But this is not just a story of survival. The last 5 months have also been about gay men, lesbians, transgender, bisexual and queer people making Mardi Gras theirs. 2,500 people will have been volunteers for Mardi Gras by the end of the season. That speaks volumes to me about the continued relevance of this organisation. And frankly, that figure doesn't count the hundreds of people who will be involved in floats with various community organisations, the hundreds of people who are involved in putting on festival events, or the hundreds of people who will be volunteering for collections, or all the other myriad of things that go on over the next 3 weeks.
As a West Aussie, I've often looked to Mardi Gras and the Sydney gay and lesbian, transgender, bisexual and queer community as a source of inspiration and hope. And are there any West Aussies out there today? Oh, good. Your community, that is the Sydney community, assisted in raising my expectations that it simply wasn't good enough that gay and lesbian people in WA were systematically treated as second-class citizens before the law. Personally, I overcame a great sense of personal isolation as I marched in my first WA Pride Parade in 95 with my mother. And I hope that many other young people will have a similar experience on the 1st of March, whether it comes through marching in the Pride in the parade, watching it from the streets or attending the party. It's remarkable to me that such a strong sense of community has grown from a protest brutally oppressed by police 25 years ago. And I'd like to extend my personal thanks to generations of activists that have fought to improve our lot in life.
I want to put a case to you tonight that it was all worth it. There are boys and girls out there in the cities and towns and back blocks of Australia, in the other countries in our region, who know that they might be different from the heterosexual mainstream. They might be suffering from loneliness and fear of discovery, fear of rejection, but they know they're not alone. They know they're not alone because every February their sisters and brothers across this land and from across the seas come together in Sydney and joyfully, cleverly, publicly, celebrate sexual difference. There are people, you know, who go around saying, oh, Mardi Gras passé. Gay has become so mainstream that it doesn't matter anymore. Well, all I can say is that they should tell that to the likes of John Howard and Bill Heffernan and George Pell. They don't think we're okay. They're constantly telling how we are different, that we don't deserve the same rights as heterosexuals, that our sex is disgusting, that we need to be cured. You'd have to live a pretty isolated existence these days not to know people who, when it comes down to it, would prefer that bis and trannies, lesbians, gays and queers would just quietly go away. If it's not your close relative or your co-worker, then it's your neighbour or the local hoon who yells out, up leso, because on a public street you've got your arm around your partner. Mardi Gras, on the other hand, has been the one institution which brings us all together. Mardi Gras is the public face of a whole bunch of people and communities who vote. And we should never let the politicians forget it. Mardi Gras is the celebration which brings together all of us who have a sexuality which is not ordinary, whose sexuality is extraordinary. It means, simply put, that we have better lives. In a world which is going crazy around us, we owe it to our sisters and our brothers in less fortunate circumstances to build on this wonderful foundation, to inspire others to live their lives too, free of fear and free of loathing. We haven't done too bad a job of making Mardi Gras as fabulous as it is over the last 25 years. Now, onward for the next 25 years. Get out there, buy tickets, go to Shop Yourself Stupid, throw together a frock, make up a float, have fun, long live Mardi Gras.
You've been listening to highlights from the launch of the new Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, recorded on February 7th by This Way Out's Michael Schembri. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Michael Schembri, and Michael Schembri contributed program material. Peter Hicks and Kevin Aviance performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thank you for listening on Contact FM, Hamilton, New Zealand, KHSU, Arcata, California, our newest affiliate, WREK, in Atlanta, Georgia, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Thanks again for staying tuned.